May it please the court. My name is Jose Aponte. I'll be representing Mr. Julio Alvarado Bond this morning on our appeal from the United States District Court. The appeal specifically addresses two issues that were decided by Judge Locke in that honorable court. There was a motion to suppress that was filed by myself for my client. The issues when they were decided was that the search of the residence was based under voluntary consent given from my client. In the alternative, the court also said that the officers were within their rights to proceed to a protective sweep based on the information that they had before them. I will address each of the issues.
And when you said there's two issues,
yes,
these are related, right, in the sense that for you to win, you have to win both of them. For the government to win, the government only has to win one of them.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Just want to make sure.
To be clear, I would have to show that first and foremost, consent was not voluntarily given by my client. In that case, the government that has the ability to say, well, if that's the case, the officer still proceeded in under a protective sweep. I'll take them both in order. With respect to the consent issue, the question is very simple, is whether or not my client provided consent for the what the sweep or the search that the officers did preliminarily. I'm not going to try to rehash the entire information that's in the briefs, but there was information received by the police about a potential quote-unquote mass shooting. And this was in a time when there was much hysteria around this, and I certainly understand there was heightened alert on the part of police. The police receive information about a potential address and identification of this individual from that was received based on the informant tip that was
so called. Can I move us forward? Because your brief spends a lot of time on this too.
Yes, sir.
Do you agree with me? The going to the front door, you have not challenged that, and that doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment at all.
Correct.
You don't disagree that a person let them into the apartment.
No question.
So I guess what I'll, skipping to the end, by the time at the moment the officers are standing inside the house, the Fourth Amendment literally has nothing to say about anything that happened up until that moment.
100%, Your Honor.
Okay. So the only question is if in that moment your client consented, and if he didn't consent, whether the officers are allowed to do it anyway, right?
That's correct.
Okay. You also agree that this court has said consent is a factual finding reviewed for clear error?
That's correct, Judge.
So why was Judge Locke clearly erroneous in concluding that your client consented?
And Judge, and this is what I think is important with respect to the facts of this case. We are dealing with individuals who are not native English speakers. And we know that because not only do we have the officers that are there to investigate, we also have a third officer who's a native Spanish speaker because they know they are dealing with Spanish speakers. I think that becomes an issue, and I'll tell the court why. When we get to the point in time, as the court said, they've come in, there's no question, it was a knock and talk. My client let them into the residence. They're standing in the living room. When Detective Kinnery tells Officer Ferreras, let him know we're going to go look for other people. He doesn't ask. He doesn't inquire. He says, let him know we are going to do this. At that point, Officer Ferreras translates that bit of information, says, hey, we are going to go look for other people. And this is the key part is my client says, yeah, go ahead and check. That's the first part of the sentence.
And he gestures.
Yes,
Judge Locke finds he gestures.
Yes, he does find that there was a...
Okay, well, that seems pretty important because if a person says we're going to do something and I say, that's a key part of whether I'm agreeing to what they've just said they're going to do,
Judge,
right?
For our discussion, that's correct. I'll concede
he
to
not
that.
Just gestured, he nodded.
I think, Judge, he kind of directed towards the back of
go
the...
Go check and nodded and gestured toward the area to be searched with an upturned hand.
Judge, and I will tell you, looking at the videos, I was more focused on the hand and the gesture as we were watching this throughout the preparation. But what's important, Judge, is immediately upon that, he says, but my understanding is that in order for you to search, you need a warrant. And that's a key point, because Officer Kinnery says, we're going to go look. Officer Ferreras translates that in a bit of information. My client says, go ahead and check gestures. And then he says, but my understanding is... Detective Kinnery has already gone. Detective Kinnery is already looking for whatever it is he's looking for.
Well, take your point on that, but why wasn't he entitled to do that? Because your client had said, go check, and gestured. At that moment, the searching officer is entitled to start searching, right?
Judge, and But the point is, there is no translation of what is said by my client.
He gestures. I don't need to translate what a gesture and a nod means. A gesture and a nod means a gesture and a nod.
Respectfully, I disagree. I think that...
You might, but why was Judge Locke clearly erroneous in concluding that that's what it means?
I think what's important, Your Honor, is that in the very next... When my client says that to the officers about the search warrant, Officer Ferreira says, we're going to check regardless. Is that okay? And the sergeant asks the question but doesn't finish. Is he acknowledging? So there's some kind of discussion going on between Ferreras and my client in Spanish, the sergeant who's not doing the protective sweep, about what is just occurring in that dialogue regarding the consent. I know that we have a gesture, but there's a series of questions and statements made that are never addressed because they're never interpreted for either Detective Kinnery or the sergeant. There's a question that's being asked by my client about the ability to search based on need for a warrant. And Sergeant goes on to say, Sergeant Roberts says, is he acknowledging? But that's never finished because at that point, Detective Kinnery is already gone.
What is your best response? So it's not like Judge Locke doesn't address this. I think you need to warrant to search, but Judge Locke addresses this and she says, in my view, that is a very ambiguous statement because on the one hand, it could mean what you're now asserting, which is basically taking back what the person just said. But it also could mean, I think you'd normally need a warrant, but I have nothing to hide, so I'm not going to insist. And Judge Locke says that statement, even if translated, is ambiguous as between those two meanings, and thus would be insufficient to withdraw any consent that was just given.
And Judge, my argument to that is, I certainly understand that's one way you could look at it, but I still submit that if my client is inquiring about...
Once you've conceded that it's one way you can look at it, how could it possibly be clearly erroneous for the district court to have looked at it precisely that way?
Because I think when the sergeant asks the question, is he acknowledging, that sergeant is raising an issue whether or not there is consent. I think that statement by Sergeant Roberts is what's most troubling, because there's a dialogue that's not being interpreted. It's a conversation between, unfortunately in this case, between a Spanish-speaking officer and my client, who's a native Spanish speaker. There's a question about a search warrant, enough to the point of raising concern for the Sergeant Roberts to ask, is he acknowledging? Which goes to Sergeant Roberts, I don't believe, is thoroughly convinced that consent has been fully given.
Does that matter? Under the Fourth Amendment, I guess if there's one message I take from the Supreme Court's Fourth Amendment cases is I'm not supposed to ask what an individual officer subjectively believed.
I understand that, Judge, but I think if we're looking at the totality of the circumstances, which is the standard that we need to apply when we're looking at whether or not consent was voluntarily given, this case becomes...
Were you there? Yes, were you involved in the hearing?
Judge. This was my case in the district court.
That's what I'm... What? You represented this fellow at the hearing.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
So you were there as well.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yes, sir. And to be fair, and not bury
the lead.
I guess
you could be a witness too.
Well, Judge, not to bury the lead, but
you are. But you can't. You're not here as a witness.
I'm not here as a witness, sir. And to be fair, I am a native Spanish speaker. It is my first language, so I do acknowledge that when I represent clients, I am at an advantage with respect to them because I understand. We are speaking the same
language. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your work to represent this fellow.
Thank you, Judge.
But again, wanted to know for sure.
Yes, sir.
If you were looking at a cold record like we are, or if you were counsel to this fellow all the way through.
No, Judge, Mr. Anthony and I have been with this case since the beginning. But Judge Hydens, to your point.
You were at the hearing. You weren't there at the door or in the house.
I was not there at the door. No, sir, Your Honor.
You were at the hearing on the motion to suppress.
I was there one step before. This case originated at the state level on the alleged bomb threat case, mass murder case.
Yeah.
I was retained on that. When those charges were dismissed by the state courts, Mr. Alvarado Dubon was subsequently arrested on federal charges, and the court asked me to accept the appointment because I had done the state charges.
But you were present at the hearing before Judge Locke.
Yes, sir, Your Honor.
That's all getting down. I understood that's what you'd be saying. That clear, though.
Yes, sir. But Judge Hydens, back to your point, I think what my argument is, in order to look at the totality of the circumstances, this is complicated a little bit, in my opinion, and what may make it a clear error is that you have a language barrier that's creating issues to what I believe is a truly consensual search that is alleged to have been granted. That's the argument with respect to the consent. With respect to the protective sweep, Your Honor, my time is running. I'll try to get to that very briefly.
There's no difference between a consent and a truly consent. It's a consent.
Period.
He had to consent.
Regardless.
And Judge Locke found he consented.
Judge Locke found he consented. My argument goes to the whether or not her decision was a clear error given the confusion that you see in the transcripts, according to my argument. With respect to the protective sweeps, Your Honor, the officers, they are not there to effectuate an arrest as you do, as they did in Maryland versus Bowie, but we know that the courts are moving away from clearing just arrest as a basis for a protective sweep. You can articulate facts. The government talks about all
they always have to protect themselves.
Yes, sir, no question.
And the public, or if there are other, possibly other people in a dwelling or a building.
Sure, no question.
Think about them too.
Yes, sir.
And here they had allegations of assault weapons and mass killings and all kinds of things like that. I mean, officers, these officers were dressed up in armored.
Correct.
With chest protectors and all this stuff.
Yes, sir.
They always have to, but particularly in this situation, have to be on the lookout.
Judge, I agree, but
it doesn't make a difference whether they're with you. They're executing an arrest. They weren't doing that here.
Judge, I'm starting with the basis established in Maryland versus Bowie, but I'm also acknowledging that there is case law that talks about it's not just whether they are there for an arrest. You can look at the facts surrounding why they are present and see if there are articulable facts that would make it reasonable for an officer to effectuate the sweep that these officers do. My argument against that, Your Honor, is that in this case, the police rely upon a random anonymous tip. They verify an address and a name. When the police arrive that night, they talk to my client, who is not the person who is referred to as El Chapin or Mr. Balcarce, one and the same person who they believe is the target. My client is there. He says, I live here. My son is not here. Mr. Balcarce, the person who is the target of this investigation, comes out from the back. They have pictures. All three officers acknowledge that clearly the person in the picture is the person that's standing before them. So at that point they have...
And he denied it was him.
He denied it was him, but all three officers immediately said, yes, clearly this is the person before us. And
so they had him lying, as far as they were concerned.
Yes, sir, no question. But my argument, so they rely upon that. They have the target of the investigation there. There, you know, and I believe that at that point, given the fact that there are three officers, you have the two individuals, you have them establishing Mr. Balcarce, who is the alleged target of this anonymous tip, I think they have the information for them that they need. If they want to look further, I think they can take Mr. Balcarce into custody, which is never done. He's not taken into custody that night. He's not detained. Once the police leave at that point, they have not taken any action with respect to Mr. Balcarce. So I'm not really quite sure what the fear of Mr. Balcarce was. If they knew it was him, they believed it was him wholeheartedly because they had...
So these are arguments that assume you can do a frisk, at least in some circumstance, a sweep in some circumstances.
Yes, sir,
right, okay. Because are you aware of any court of appeals post-Bowie
that
has actually grappled with Bowie's reasoning that has not said that you can do a protective... For it. Sometimes you can do a protective sweep even without an arrest.
Judge, I will concede that the most prevalent cases, United States versus Everett, 91 Fed 4th 698, and there's a reference to Laudermilk. Both of those all acknowledge.
But of course, saying you can do it isn't saying you can do it here. It's just saying you could do
right.
it in principle.
All of them have moved away from Bowie saying you need an arrest to be able to do that. They all that was my point. I'm acknowledging the negative precedent that they're moving away from requiring just an arrest warrant. You as an officer can articulate facts. The question is whether the search on this day was merely a hunch that they would find something else or whether it was an articulable fact to be able to do the protective sweep. I'm about to run out of time, so I'll stop at this point, sir. Thank you very much, honors.
You save some time.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Anthony?
Good morning. I'm Stephan Anthony for the United States. May it please the court. When the defendant told Richmond police officers who were allowed in his home without any confrontation, that they could go ahead and check, there's no one else here. He clearly, unequivocally, and voluntarily.
Counsel, before you go further into the house, this was just a knock and talk only, correct?
That's the way it started, yes, sir.
Boy, that's the way you get in without, in terms of constitutional protection. He opened the door and knocked to talk, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, but then they went straight away to look for somebody almost, didn't they?
No, sir.
Oh, they didn't? Okay. Well, tell me the conversation they had with the talk with the person who allowed them in for that scope of their being allowed to come in.
Yes, sir. So the three officers enter the what I would call the living room area of the house, and there is the defendant and another individual who goes by the name of Bal Carcel at the rear of the living room. And what the officers start to discuss with the defendant is, do you know the person in a photograph? I believe they have it on their phone initially. Mm-hmm. They show him the picture. He initially says, I can't see it. Let me see it again. They show it to him a second time, and he says, I don't know that person.
All right.
They then take the phone over to Mr. Bal Carcel, and they say, do you know who this person is? And he denies knowing who that person is.
He said no.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then.
So that's the talk. Okay, what else after that? They both said they don't know the person that has been shown on the picture. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I believe it was Officer Kennery showing the photo. Officer Kennery then goes back over to Officer Ferreras and shows the picture again. And I believe it's Officer Ferreras who says, well, that's him, pointing to Mr. Bal Carcel. And he says, yes, the same beard line and everything. And they take the picture back over and they say, that's not you? And I don't recall if Mr. Bal Carcel either says nothing or denies again. But at that point, the officers had denials from both the defendant and the suspect that the individual in the photo who was Mr. Bal Carcel was not him. So that was the talking portion initially of the knock and talk. After that, Officer Kennery asked Officer Ferreras to ask the defendant, are there any weapons in the house? And I believe, is there anyone else here? And that's when.
Well, in America, no, that's no problem, right? The Constitution, you know, it's brewing in all these cases. That's a typical American right and tradition, isn't it? Having a gun, I mean, that's constitutionally protected.
It would be constitutionally protected.
Not so. Contraband, and it doesn't come with any kind of implications at all about illegal, does it? That's not, how it works not, for everybody else. That's how it works for everybody else. Sure. Not if you can carry it around.
Sure.
Right? Okay, but go ahead.
Not in and of itself is the possession of a firearm illegal, no, sir.
Sure, certainly.
But at that point, the officer is come into the home on the information that someone in that home possesses large caliber rifles, has made a threat.
Yeah, but now aren't you changing the scope now? This is to knock and talk. You've asked the question, they've answered it. Mm-hmm. So now you're saying because of what you know, then it's almost then it's a planned search almost, isn't it?
No, sir.
Well, the talking is over.
No, talking is continuing.
But he could have stopped you. He could have thrown you out. Not thrown you out, but said, get out of my home.
I think up until the point that the officers determined that there is a rifle in the house that matches the description, the defendant certainly could have withdrawn consent or at least attempted to. That did not happen here. What happens is the officers come into the residence, again, on the information of a tip about potentially a mass shooting. As they enter the home, they see indicia of firearms possession, namely a handgun magazine, I believe a rifle round on the mantle right near the front door. They have the fact that the defendant and the suspect, Mr. Bal Carcel, have denied knowing that it is him in the photo. And so at that point, the officers are suspicious that there might be someone else in the home that could cause them harm. And so Officer Kennery says, tell him that we're going to look around to see if there's anyone else in the home. And that's when the defendant says, go ahead and check, there's no one else here. And only after he says that does Officer Kennery then begin to go toward the rear of the home to see if there was anyone
else. So what was said to him was not a question, but it was telling him that's a direct, we're going to do this. We're going to do this, right? Didn't ask, may we? It said, tell him we're going to do this. Is that right?
It was a statement, yes, sir.
Right. And then how many people there? They were armed police officers, right?
There are three armed police officers.
Right. And they told him, we're going to do this. And you say that the consent arose from that statement directed.
The consent arose from the statement of, we're going to check to see if there's anyone else here. Yes, sir.
Do you really think he had a real opportunity to consent or to not give it?
Yes, sir.
Three police officers, they're armed with like SWAT team type, right?
I don't know if they're armed like SWAT.
SWAT, I mean, they had bodyguards, you know, the police on the back and the big writing and their weapons, right?
Yes, sir.
And they said, that's what we're going to do. And you think that that was consent?
Well, I think a couple things. First of all, the district court found that, and I don't think there's any evidence that is clearly erroneous. But beyond that, what the district court found is that the tone of the officers, the behavior of the officers, despite having weapons, nothing they did indicated a show of force. They never displayed their weapons in any way. It was simply a conversation they were having up until the point that they decided to make a walk around the house for other persons. So there was nothing in that.
It wasn't a search. It was protective sweep is what was called, right?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry if I said search. Yes, it was a protective sweep because they were looking for individuals that may have been in the home that could cause them harm while they were lawfully present in the home. And so, again, when the defendant.
So you're only looking for human beings in the home?
That's correct.
Okay, so you wouldn't go into any drawers or cabinets or anything like that?
That's correct. And I do believe the officers could have gone into a closet potentially because the closet.
How long does protective sweep take?
It takes the amount of time reasonably necessary to dispel.
No, but this one.
Oh, this one was about 15 seconds.
15 seconds?
Yes, sir.
And that the record reflects that?
Yes, sir.
Did the judge say that?
Judge Locke did find that it was about a 15-second look around the residence. And then in plain view, as the officer is going through one of the bedrooms, he sees what appears to be the same rifle about which they had received the tip.
The same rifle? Or yes. The same type?
Well, same type of rifle, I should say.
That had been described by the tipster?
It had, and it had been described specifically
that
as...
That was an AK-47 or an AR-15 or something?
I believe it was described as an AR-15 type rifle.
AR-15 type?
Yes. But more
they're legal, aren't they?
They are legal.
Right. That's what, again, they're legal. I mean, it have both ways. I mean, the Supreme Court said those things are legal. Well, people need them to protect themselves.
Sure. It could be legal in one context.
Because Go ahead.
But I think the point is what they were looking for is not something of an illegal nature necessarily.
Why didn't you get a warrant then?
Well, they're legal in some states. We have said that Maryland can make them illegal if they want to, and they have.
Yes, sir.
Why didn't you get a warrant if you had all these tipsters and then just search the house as you normally would, and you have a chance for an independent magistrate to say whether or not this this sweep, you had good grounds, right, to say that it's likelihood based on what we've been told by these people, whoever the informants were, the tipsters were, that there's contraband and or individuals who are suspects, and you've gotten a warrant. I mean, that's what the Fourth Amendment is for. But instead, you come in and you say to a person whose English is not their native tongue, and then you tell them, this is what we're going to do, and then it's a protective sweep. You know, protective sweep, really, you don't really, never mind, go ahead.
Well, I'll speak to your question, Judge. There may have been an opportunity to gain a search warrant at that point. However, there was the point of clarifying and confirming that the suspect did live there. And so that was the purpose of going for a knock and talk to see if they could identify the suspect there. And they did identify the suspect.
Why did you arrest it right there while you're standing there with you?
Well, at that point, they had a suspicion that he may have made the threat and that he may have possessed a firearm. They hadn't confirmed any of that yet. So the point was to get confirmation that the suspect lived there, A, and then do further investigation to show A or B that he may have made the threat, and C, that he also possessed the capacity, that is the firearms, that he was alleged to have possessed. And so what the officers did, I think, is the least intrusive method they could have used, which was not to get a search warrant and then also arrest the defendant or arrest the suspect without making those other preliminary investigatory steps to confirm that they had a basis to do that under the law.
This was all an investigation?
Yes, sir. Right.
And there was no search conducted. That's the position of the government.
That's correct. And actually, after the first firearm is seen in plain view, they didn't go through searching the house by themselves at that point. Actually, the defendant came to the bedroom and then started to show them where other firearms were and actually showed him where his identification documents.
Wait, do you think a search done with consent is not a search, or do you think a search done with consent is categorically reasonable under the Fourth Amendment?
I would say it's both, but that wasn't what happened here. The consent was to go.
Well, but how is not going into the other room a search? I mean, it may be reasonable. It may be reasonable because the defendant consented. It may be reasonable because it was a valid protective sweep. But does that change that it's a search?
Yes, sir. I believe a protective sweep would be different from a search.
But the Fourth Amendment only regulates searches, and we agree that the Fourth Amendment regulates protective sweeps. So if the Fourth Amendment regulates protective sweeps, then protective sweeps have to be searches. I agree they're not arrests. I agree they're limited searches. But I don't know what authority says they're not searches under the Fourth Amendment.
And that may be a question of my own semantics in trying to distinguish.
Sure, it's not a full-blown search. Sure. I know it's not a custodial arrest. Sure. It's not a – there's no
– I don't want to confuse it with either some sort of need for probable cause.
Totally.
Or actually a more intrusive actual search where they are going through drawers or pulling apart furniture or something like that.
Yeah, I may have led you into that.
I think you expressed your view and how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the police officers knock on my front door,
yes, sir,
and I open the door, and they see someone moving behind me in my home,
yes, sir,
they can say, I feel like I need to be protected. I can go and sweep for my protection. That's basically what you're saying, because it's not a search anyway. You say it's just my protection. And I can see a police officer might feel like I'm at the door, I'm the threshold right here, and I see somebody go that way. But that's my home. I can have 50 people, 20 people in there, I guess, in my home. All of a sudden now, because you need to be protected, you can just walk in and say, because of my protection, that was the whole purpose, because the person you were looking for, the man said, well, that's him right there. He's there. You're finished. So, but you said you can go through the house because you feel you need protection. And that's a hypothetical. You could go through my house because you saw someone walking across behind me into another room. So who's that? I feel threatened. I'm going to go in and check on them and see if they have a gun or whatever. In that hypothetical, that's not a search, and you could just do that. Is that right?
No, sir.
Okay, what's the limitation there then?
So the limitation in doing a protective sweep is the same as the limitation you would have in a Terry stop, the same as you would have in a Michigan versus Long situation. The officer has to articulate specific facts which lead him to be concerned that someone in that residence poses a threat to him, and therefore he needs to make sure that there's no one else in that residence. What we're talking about is not just an officer, because he's in the home, gets to check it out to see who is there, or the absence of information. In fact, I believe one of this court's cases, if not Everett, it was in Portis, specifically said the lack of information doesn't provide a basis to do a protective sweep. What we have to do is articulate facts to show that there is some risk to the officer, and then along the lines of Terry and Long, an officer can then do a protective sweep, a very cursory, short in time protective sweep to confirm that there is no one else present in the home that might pose a threat to him. So in your hypothetical, Judge, simply the officers being there without any other information about why the officer's there, whether you would in fact even be a suspect, they could be knocking on your door as a witness. And certainly they wouldn't have any reason to believe at that point that there was somebody else in the home, or not necessarily having a reason at that point to believe someone else in the home would pose a threat to them, they would not be able to then just go through your house in that circumstance. In this circumstance, what we were talking about is a set of officers with the information about a armed person making threats, having long rifles, long guns, one being a style of rifle that we know does cause mass damage. And then when they get to the home and they're led inside, they actually see indicia of the presence of firearms, the handgun magazine, the rifle round. They also are aware at that point that other people live there besides the two individuals they're talking to. One of the first things they converse with the defendant about is that he has two other sons who live there. Now, he also says they aren't there at the moment, but again, we have the fact that the officer is showing him a picture of the suspect, and the defendant both denying it and the suspect himself denying that that's him when it is indeed him. So all of that information taken together is what the district court...
So the suspect was lying.
Yes, sir.
So you think the difference here, the tipster makes a big difference here, right?
I think all of these facts makes a difference, and it's a conglomeration of them on which the district court...
How does the tipster matter for the consent issue?
Well, the tipster matters in terms of the protective sweep.
Sure, issue. But for the consent issue, it doesn't matter at all, right?
No, I don't think the consent issue matters, but only in the sense that that's why they were there.
But the Fourth Amendment, your friend has conceded that until that happens, yes, nothing sir. That happened implicated the Fourth Amendment at all.
Yes, sir. I don't think there's any dispute about the officers coming into the home being a matter of consent. There was no mistranslation there. He was clearly able to understand Officer Ferreras. Indeed, there were moments when the defendant was able to understand Detective Kennery speaking in English. I'll give you an example. When Detective Kennery goes and sees what he thinks is the rifle, he says, "I got the rifle in the room." The defendant responds directly to Detective Kennery and says, "No, it's an air rifle." And then Officer Ferreras tries to translate it, but he's like, "No, it's an air rifle. I can show you." And so he goes back to the room with Officer Kennery, and that's where the other firearms are found. So there's no mistranslation from the United States perspective in Spanish, and there is even some understanding of English by this defendant, which also goes to the issue that there is no lack of consent, certainly no withdrawal of consent. The district court found clearly and unerroneously that this defendant consented. Just to say a little bit more about the protective sweep issue and why this court should extend it from the arrest context to non-arrest context. Again, the logic behind Maryland versus Bowie, the United States believes, is that the officers have a right to protect themselves when they have a reason they can state reasonable articulable facts that there might be someone else in the home that could cause threat to them. And that is not dependent upon whether they are there to execute arrests, conduct a, or serve a protective order, or on the basis of consent. If they are in that presence of, or in the presence of a residence, and they have a basis to believe, and they can articulate that there might be someone else who can cause a threat to them, the protective sweep would allow them to do that. A cursory, shortened time protective sweep that is not as intrusive as any other search, as Judge Heitens was mentioning, that the Fourth Amendment would prohibit.
And that would include children too, right? Any person potentially could be a threat to you, right? Children?
Certainly not an infant, I don't think. But
no, I said children. I didn't say infant, but children, like six-year-olds, seven-year-olds, right?
I wouldn't want to put a particular limit based on age.
You're right, because there is no limit in terms of what you're urging the court to do. In other words, once you said anyone who could potentially cause harm to them, I mean, that's pretty much from about 5 or 6 years old up.
Well, I think there's a logical limit that we could impose. I know the court says you're talking about children, not infants, but I would argue infants fall under the category of children. But some six-year-olds have more dexterity and capacity than another six-year-old.
Well,
I don't know what sort of situation.
I think most six-year-olds could shoot a handgun and just pull the trigger.
If that's the case, then, Judge, I believe the officers would have the capacity to at least look to see if that person was there.
If the kid comes around or somebody comes around, it's more danger in terms of someone getting killed.
I mean, other way you do this protective sweep, the broader you get it, the more likely in terms of engaging people in homes. I mean, I guess, you know, certain homes they come to, they maybe they're more limited. Other homes, they feel more danger, right? And that, see, that's the problem in terms of that, when that subjective idea, it comes with demographics, the neighborhoods you're in and everything. The sweep gets larger, smaller based on what your perception is, the demographics, the neighborhood, income level. You know, it comes some homes, like a mansion, you know, you don't go anywhere at all. Other people have two-room places. We need to make sure there's nobody in here. That's the limiting aspect of it. You know, from a tipster, that no independent magistrate ever assessed reliability and where they were and who's calling. Was this a tip from somebody who didn't? You know, we don't know in the record who that was. For example, you know, a next door neighbor could say, I believe my neighbor is doing something, and they have guns. So when you knock on the door, then you feel, as here, any movement like that might be a threat because the tip included having a gun, right? Don't you agree with that based on your logic and where you're going, that increases the concern of protection based on what the tips are said, like here? Because there were guns implicated, and I understand that. But what's the limiting aspect of it? The Fourth Amendment is getting—it's very difficult to see why. I thought one of the most powerful thing that the framers did, and they said about government, they were suspicious about government. No, you can't come into my house and search without probable cause. No, you can't. They were defiant. But now it's almost like, well, you know, it's sweep, how broad it is. So what's the limitation?
I see I'm out of time. May I respond?
You absolutely.
Thank you.
As long as you get questions, you keep answering.
Yes, sir. And, Judge, there's a number of things you mentioned. I want to try to address as many as I can in my allotted time. First of all, I would say that it's not a subjective measure of what an officer feels and whether he just feels threatened. Again, he must articulate a reasonable basis for
high crime area. That's articulated.
I'm sorry?
It's a high crime area. They do it all the time. You know, high crime area. That's it, period. That's enough. Normally it is. I mean, I've had a lot of cases. That's what they say, high crime area.
Well, I would just say
high unemployment, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I would just say that the officer is not able to rely solely on subjective basis to do a protective sweep. Secondly, in terms of whether the tip matters ultimately for a protective sweep purposes, certainly it does. I would also note that this wasn't merely an anonymous tip. The record shows, and I believe it is Joint Appendix page 52, the testimony of Sergeant Rogers, is that one of the officers actually called the tipster and spoke to him directly and discussed both the description of the suspect and the threat that the tipster had alleged that he had made. So it wasn't merely an anonymous tip. And the officers did other research beyond that before even going to the residence. They spoke to the suspect's boss to confirm both where he thought he stayed, his identity, that he potentially had connections to Los Zetas, was a Mexican cartel. They also checked the calls for service in the area. And they saw that maybe 10 days before.
So you had plenty of opportunity to get a warrant for his arrest.
They had an opportunity to conduct an investigation.
You had plenty of opportunity to get a warrant. But you just articulated there, I don't think a magistrate would have any problem giving you a warrant.
And again, the point of them going to the house was to use the least intrusive means that they could use, which at that point was a knock and talk to confirm that the defendant was there, the suspect was there. And so I don't think the officer should be held at fault for being least intrusive when they could have been more intrusive.
More intrusive to come to my home without a warrant.
Well, it's least intrusive because they were there by way of consent. And so you search warrant, you don't have any consent. They might kick the door in. So that's more intrusive than asking, can we come in and speak? And you say, yes, come in.
Richmond police wouldn't do that. I know them very well. They would knock on the door as ladies and gentlemen and say, is somebody here? And they wouldn't kick your door in.
I would hope they would, Judge, in most situations.
I'm sure they wouldn't. I practiced law in Richmond for a long time, criminal defense work. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Richmond's finest, as they call them, would just do that.
Well, I won't comment on that, Judge. I would just say that it's at least intrusive from my perspective. If there's nothing else, then I would...
Thank you very much, Mr. Anthony.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. Mr. Aponte?
May it please the court again, Your Honors. We talk about the least intrusive. I think that's a fair point. Yes, my client was cooperative to the extent he allows the officers to come into his home. They're engaging in a conversation. As was asked, the officer...
He wasn't cooperative if he was lying to the officers.
Judge, the lying was... He was shown a picture on a phone. He said, do you recognize this? He's first asked, do you recognize the name El Chapin? Is what he's asked. Like, I don't know who that is. He said, I don't know anybody by that name. Then they show him a picture. Do you recognize this guy? He says he has a hard time seeing it. Mind you, we're close to midnight. He's woken out of a dead sleep. He's got three armed officers in his living room. I think he's still coming to his senses when he's, you know, phone is put up to his face. I mean, it takes me a while to put on my glasses to be able to be coherent and see articulately, or see clearly, if you will. Judge, when they come in, the defendant is cooperative. The person who they ultimately believe is this person is the other person that comes out of the back of the house.
The person who they ultimately believe, or the person that we've ultimately determined was in fact?
Well, the person they come in saying, we're looking for Bob Carcel. We have this picture. The officers, all three of them, throughout their testimony, said we had no question that was him. If that's the case, detain Mr. Balcarcel. I know you may not have enough to arrest. You have enough to detain him. You have enough to ask questions. You have enough to freeze the scene and go get a search warrant. But there was no intention. The intention was to go find what they believe was the fruits of this crime. That was Kennery's intention when he didn't ask if he could go look. When he didn't specifically ask Prince N, he said, tell them we're going to go look. That was a directive. That was not a request. That was not a asking for consent. That was, here's what we're doing. And I think during the course of that interaction between the Spanish-speaking officers and Sergeant Roberts, there's a question as to whether or not he could do that or whether consent had been unequivocally provided by Mr. Alvarado Dubon to the police officers to go back into the rest of the house.
Didn't they also, to your client, ask him if he recognized the name, the first name? He didn't just say El Chapin, right? He gave the first name of the person they were looking for.
He gave the name El Chapin, and the second name that's given, I think, was just the last name. I don't think they...
Well, we gave a name. It wasn't just a sort of nickname.
Sure.
And your client also said, I have no idea who that is.
But again, Judge, these are people who are, you know, he's there. We don't know what my client knows. But yes, he denies knowing the name of the person as Balcarcel. But then going back to the protective sweep, Judge, at this point, the officer has had the ability to detain Mr. Balcarcel, who they believe is this mass terrorist, which they don't. They have Mr. Alvarado Dubon, the homeowner. They can detain them. They can get a search warrant. They can freeze the scene. If they're going to freeze the scene to get a search warrant, I think they can make sure nobody else is there, but they don't freeze the scene. They immediately go to look for what they believe because Kennery says, hey, I found it. Yes, you found an air rifle. That's what you found, Detective Kennery. You didn't find a weapon of mass destruction. You found an air rifle. And then that's where everything else flows from. And I submit to the court that Detective Kennery steamrolled through this quote-unquote consent, got to the back rooms by using the idea of protective sweep when there were other lawful methods which could have been used to achieve the same result. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Aponte. And we recognize that you're appointed in this case.
Yes, sir.
We really appreciate your work.
Absolutely.
And what you do. Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel and then take a short break.
This honorable court will take a brief recess.
All right.